This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Hey everyone, quick note before we dive in. Today's episode contains descriptions of physical violence, of abuse, and as such may not be appropriate for all audience members. Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Shout out to our one and only super producer, Mr. Max Williams. Woo. Give him a hand. Give him two. Give him three. You know.
And give him another woo.
Give him another woo. Yeah. Woo. He is. We are actively wooing you, Max. I am Ben. Noel, you and I are very excited because we got our stuff together and managed to make a two-parter ahead of time about bizarre behind-the-scenes stories from the world of film. And we are immensely fortunate to have returning guests in today's episode, right?
Yeah, self-proclaimed idiot alumni of Stanford University, Leanna Holston and Sienna Jekyll, the hosts of the Tossed Popcorn podcast. I didn't make that up. That's in your
that's
bio.
That's official.
Oh, yeah. No, I forget that we have just published that publicly. But it is right. What is up, my boys? Hello.
Hello.
Man, so good to have you back. So peek behind the curtain behind the episode about the peek behind the curtain. We usually record these kind of back to back, but it's actually been a couple of days. So we've had time to kind of marinate on what we talked about in the last episode and are super excited to talk about two new bizarro Hollywood tales.
Oh, yeah. And may I quickly, before I forget, yes. Sienna and I actually are going to be starting a celebrity feud, and we're very happy to be announcing that on your show.
Yes. Oh, wow.
And it is
thank
with
you.
Friend okay. of your pod and co-host of a different pod with you, the one, the only Matt Frederick.
What'd he do?
So this was, gosh, August of last year. Is that right, Sienna?
I can say yes. That sounds
sure. We were on an iHeart all-staff call introducing ourselves, and he suggested that he was going to start a rival podcast called Caught Popcorn, in which he gives a response to each of our episodes as a self-proclaimed film buff. And we said, very funny, Matt Frederick. This is the beginning of a lovely and beautiful friendship. We followed him on Instagram. It has been 7 months. No follow has occurred from him back to us. So, Matt Frederick, we're calling you out, man.
He will have and to tell him. He's not a social media guy.
In his defense, he is absolutely not a social media. It's like to the point where when Ben and I call out our personal socials on the podcast that we do with Matt, he just makes up a new fake one every time. very private guy. So don't take it personally, but we'll definitely pass along the beef.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, I'm texting him now. Let's see if we may have an update after this.
Thank you for being our proxies for this feud.
Starting a celebrity feud with you.
I do think caught popcorn is cute though, because you guys toss it and then he catches it, presumably, you know, in his mouth or with his face.
All right, so just shot that light to him. We'll get an update if he chimes back in. I don't know about you, Noel, but I 100% support this feud. You know what I mean?
But there has to be a podcast first for the feud to truly exist. Mm-hmm. I think a beef about not following back on Instagram is a little too minor. Like, we need to get him to get the podcast up and running, and then you guys can truly be rivals in the space.
In starting
this
feud,
cinema.
We've accidentally gifted him another podcast.
Yeah, just what he needs.
Yeah,
just what he needs.
So much free time. So we're going to talk a little bit about feuds today, but do tune in to part one of this episode, which came out earlier last week, I think on a Thursday. And you'll want to check out some amazing stories there, things that will change the way that you think of the Wizard of Oz. I'm trying to say that diplomatically. And you'll learn the story of an amazing journey from surviving the actual Titanic wreck to being in the first movie about the Titanic. Like, literally, what was it, Noel, a week later?
Yeah, they really fast tracked that one, classic Hollywood fashion, and did not go well. Well, I mean, it went well in terms of the movies being successful, but not for the woman who starred in it. Mm-hmm.
And you'll learn all about that in part one. So we're going to pause for the magic of podcasting. Let you catch up. Perfect. All right. You're caught up. So we're diving back in. We're so glad that you're here with us today, folks. I was also quite excited about this first story we're going to explore. Sienna, you have dug up some fascinating and maybe not entirely wholesome things about the legendary comedic actor, Charlie Chaplin.
Correct. Speaking of women being screwed over from the last podcast, it's coming up again. Yes.
Oh, from the last podcast. Yeah, I thought
you were leaning into the beef.
I don't All think right. we were specific. Okay. Oh, no. Okay. No, that's you.
Like, oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Start this feud for women's rights.
Let us fight Matt, please.
Got a mean left hook. I'd be careful. But Charlie Chaplin. I mean, I've mentioned before, I think when we weren't recording, that I have a pretty big blind spot in my film knowledge around Charlie Chaplin movies. I don't know that I've seen a single one ever all the way through. I've just seen like little clips, you know, of him like puttering around like a, you know, wind up toy.
Yeah, City Lights was one of the movies on the list, and I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the silent movie acting. And after this research, I feel differently about Charlie Chaplin.
Aw. This is funny, because the structure of our show, normally I am the one who does the historical context segment. So I'll come into the podcast being like, I don't know about this movie. And Sienna's usually like, it was so silly and fun.
It was so fun.
And now it's so fun to have this sort of switched.
Yeah. Now I get why you weren't a big fan, because he's another Hollywood boy. So I was originally actually going to talk about City Lights. I was going to talk about the scene that took him 342 takes to get perfectly. But actually, in researching Charlie Chaplin, I instead am going to talk about his 1927 divorce from his teenage wife, Lita Gray.
Oh, no.
Teenage?
Yes.
Red flags.
It is juicy. Yes. Red flags. A lot of red flags about Charlie Chaplin. Are you ready to hear about it?
I'm braced.
Wait, hang on. Let me sip some coffee. Okay, I'm braced.
Charlie Chaplin, as we know, Sir Charles Spencer Chaplin is the name he was born with. First name, Sir.
Born.
He was born in 1889 in London. And honestly, the year he was born is going to be the part that's most important to this. But just so you know, he was an extremely famous and successful silent filmmaker, silent film actor. He was famous for his character, the Little Tramp. And of course, he ended up coming to the United States and making lots of movies here. And while he was here, he met a young woman named Lita Gray. So actually, when they met, she was 6 years old, which...
Oh!
Just a rough
Isn't
start
that
to
vetting?
Think.
Vetting? Yeah.
Grooming.
Grooming, that's the word, excuse me. Yikes.
Oh my stars. No, they just happened to meet at that time, but it's just sort of like an eerie beginning to this story that they ended up getting married. They met briefly at a restaurant. So Lita Gray is from Hollywood, born in 1908. She met Chaplin briefly at a restaurant when she was 6 years old. And then when she was 12 years old, he was casting the movie The Kid, ironically called The Kid, which she was not the kid. She was cast at that time as the role of Flirting Angel.
No.
Which is as bad as it sounds. I actually watched a little bit. And it is.
Oh, no.
It was just a different time. But as we will find, this was also bad then, too. Fun fact about the movie The Kid, that actually, the child actor who did play the so-called The Kid went on to be the child actor who sued his parents and got legal protections for child actors in general in California.
Oh, wow.
With the California Child Actor
kid.
Actors Bill. Yeah. So anyway, The Kid was bad for child actors all around. Moving on, after that, Chaplin and Gray met again when he was testing actresses for the upcoming movie The Gold Rush, which ended up coming out in 1925. He was looking for a brunette lead actress, so Lita Gray went out for the role. Side note, fun fact, to insert some fun stuff into this. Disturbing story.
Yeah, thank you.
The Gold Rush is the film in which Charlie Chaplin cooks and eats his shoe.
That's funny. That's a funny bit. I bet audiences loved that.
Mm-hmm. I watched it and it was indeed funny. Unfortunately, at this time, so during casting, Chaplin and Gray begin an affair. At this time, she is 15 years old. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, that was also bad at the time. Because shortly after their affair begins, she becomes pregnant.
Oh, God.
And they have to get married because he would be arrested. A little more on that. But first I'll say something interesting is that Lita Gray was originally cast as the lead in The Gold Rush. But after she started showing her pregnancy, he removed her from the film and replaced her with Georgia Hale, who ended up playing the
lead. So actively like covering it up, essentially, right?
Yes, yes. Already covering it up. But they had already started shooting. And as I said, I was originally going to talk about another thing where they did a million takes to get this one scene. I just don't understand how films used to work in the past, because it seems like film would have been expensive and hard to take. But Chaplin, in many of these stories that I've been reading about him, he just is really willy-nilly with the film here.
I wonder if it was just because he was at such a high level, kind of like as a star, that they, you know, would afford him kind of that in the budget.
Yeah.
Like, we know if we get Charlie Chaplin, we got to have like canisters and canisters of film, like for days.
Exactly. Exactly. He really just went through it. So anyway, they shot a lot of it, ended up cutting that and putting a whole new actress in. I don't know also how he covered that up at the time, but anyway, so she becomes pregnant. The reason they get married is because they had to at the time, so he wouldn't be arrested. But he offered to pay for an abortion for her. She said no. Her family was so mad, understandably. Gray's mom threatened to turn him into the police if he didn't marry her. Other sources said that his family threatened to either ruin his career or kill him if he didn't marry her.
Wow.
And she also says that it also is said that a family member took his shotgun off the wall and marched to Chaplin's mansion and said, "You gotta marry my relative." I don't know what family member.
Literal shotgun wedding. That's
exactly.
Can I ask you a question,
please?
Which is, why does him marrying her make it all better? Like, what about?
I was
going to
ask about the age of
it?
Consent too. Like, because I mean, this was a long time ago, and it ranges from 14 to 18 historically. But I just wonder, what the actual law was, and
I should have that information, and I don't have the answer. Is that something I should look up right now?
I mean, it doesn't matter. I think it probably plays in some respect. But I mean, like, because the affair maybe wasn't as big a deal as the pregnancy at the time. And then mm-hmm. that's when maybe the law comes into play where it's like, oh, you have to marry this person. Because, I mean, those things were definitely a little more strict back then. Even like having a baby out of wedlock was a huge deal.
Right.
Oh,
right.
Yeah. And it could ruin the life of the child, right, in society at the time. So, yeah, I can totally see some, like, moral or blue laws being around that, like, circling around that. And I think just as importantly, the fact that he is a world-class celebrity and the fact that there is enormous social pressure on women in general in American society, it sounds like this was kind of a loveless marriage, though, right? Like, we've fooled around and now we're getting married for literally legal purposes. Mm,
exactly. He definitely did not want to marry her, nor she him, it sounds like. Great question, because we're about to get to the fun part, believe it or not, of this story. This is all...
Is it okay if I jump in real quick? I actually have some age consent numbers for us.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay. Nice. Max with the facts.
So I looked up the age of consent by history in California. So in 1850, it would have been legal because that at that time period, it was 10 years old for Jesus age of consent Christ. In California.
10, like, but, wow. human years?
But oddly enough, if the woman was the younger party, so if the male was 9 and the woman was 10, it was legal. I mean, correction, was if the woman was 9 and the man was 8, it was legal. But...
Vice versa.
If the woman was,
yeah.
Wow. But in 1897, it became 16. And by 1913, it was moved up to 18. So, yeah, this is very, very illegal by this point.
Wow.
Oh, buddy.
Oh, my.
Okay. God. Where's that my good news? Yeah, come on.
Fun part, please. Wow.
The bar is so low, though. I'm like, oh, my gosh, that's so much higher than 10. Like,
I know. Yeah. 16 is amazing. That's so good.
OK, the reason the fun stuff is coming is because we're going to get to the divorce.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey, Noel. Have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh, boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Well, here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect.
Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Such a bummer that Lita was groomed. I mean, bummer.
Sure.
But she holds her own once the divorce comes around. Okay. So, Ben, you're so right. The marriage was bad vibes. They didn't enjoy each other. They had different interests. Mainly he, you know, liked to be making movies and she wanted to learn to drive, I assume. And then he spent his time just pouring himself into the Gold Rush, the movie The Gold Rush, and the movie The Circus. In this time, so they were married in 1924. Oh, I apologize. I forgot to mention they were married in Mexico to quote unquote avoid scandal.
Okay.
So obviously we've all done that. They didn't want it to be a big public thing. So they're married in 1924. They're married from 1924 to 1927. During this 3 years, they had two sons and they didn't like each other. Like you said,
imagine those wedding vows. Just gorgeous.
Yeah. That's a more of a I guess than an I do.
Yeah. Right? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I have to.
Exactly. Also, to be clear, when they got married, Chaplin was 35 and Lita was 16. So, yikes.
Still, that's.
So,
goodness.
I'm making a Marge Simpson noise. Sorry.
No, please. Marge is the only way to get through this portion of the story. All right. 1927 rolls around and they are ready to be done with this.
Charade.
This charade. Yes.
Yes.
They begin divorcing in 1927. First weird fun fact about this is that Charlie Chaplin and Lita Gray's divorce papers were found in an abandoned bank in Los Angeles in what I believe was 2015.
Oh,
which is all just
heard of it.
I wonder what some collector paid for those. That's pretty wild.
I also love the concept of an abandoned bank.
Yes, yes.
We're coming. Sure. We gotta go. Leave the Chaplin papers.
It's like a dead mall, you know. But like, yeah. That's interesting.
We've got to take all the valuables. What about the Chaplin papers? There's no time.
Yeah. Turns out banks are pretty austere and sad when like there's nobody in them and they're like all aged and decrepit.
Yeah, I guess so.
So no one knew about this. No one knew about the actual papers. Right.
Yes.
The actual 50 pages of divorce paperwork. But this was like a scandal, right? Like the public surely was aware that something was not on the up and up.
Correct. So later they found out more details in the divorce papers. I think it was more of a fun fact and collector excitement when they found those. But yes, the public very much knew about the divorce. It was a big deal in the press. So this was a 9-month divorce battle. And the press was talking about it the whole time. Also, divorce not smiled upon at the time. So it was bad for his movies. There were a lot of calls for Chaplin to pull his movies at the time, which were The Gold Rush and The Circus. And I saw this one place. Apparently, Chaplin and his crew smuggled out the negatives of these films in coffee cans out of California because people were so up in arms about the fact that this scandal was going on. And they continued editing The Circus in a hotel room in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's crazy. Like the editing machines they had to have been using at the time must have been enormous. Like how do they even move those and get them into a hotel room without anybody noticing?
Oh, that is such a vibe. As someone who has edited something in a hotel in Utah, I really resonate with that so much.
Oh, you really have. Look at you, Ayana, just like Charlie Chaplin.
No.
Oh, no.
No, I'm walking it back. I've never been to Utah. I don't know anything about it.
I mean, it makes sense. Like, the heat gets too intense socially, and we know that the guy has the backing of studios that have enormous amounts of funding and resources to pull. And this is, it's weird. It's kind of a same as it ever was situation, because the we're seeing a celebrity try to get out of the headlines for a while, right? To stay low and then to come back. And if it was a celebrity scandal like nowadays, the best way to return is to divert the conversation, move the Overton window and have everybody talk about, you know, your next film or something like that. So maybe that's why they're holed up in Salt Lake, so people can say, hey, remember that guy with the scandal? His movie's awesome. You should pay to see it.
Maybe also to avoid, like, people literally coming with pitchforks to burn the negatives, you know?
Yeah.
Give us those negatives.
I just want to jump back in. She was, like, what, 19 when this is happening, right?
Yeah.
I guess at this point.
16, they were married for 3 years.
Oh, man.
Also, I have a question. I get that the public was upset about the divorce of it all, but were they, like, who were they most mad at? Were they mad at Chaplin for getting a divorce, or
I don't know, like, in the press at the time, typically in those kind of scandals, the woman would have gotten the brunt of the, like, negative press, it would seem.
Yeah, but it seems like it was definitely falling on Chaplin if he was being pressured to pull his films. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he was just such a big name at the time that I think they were so excited to have something to jump on. And the divorce itself was the problem. I didn't see as much about the age being a problem. But I'd have to look into it more. So yes, bringing up this concept of reputation and how much this affects the studios and the production houses more than just the people involved. One of the things that Lita threatened to do was to publicly name the 5 women that her husband, Charlie Chaplin, had affairs with during the course of their marriage. So,
a philanderer. Yeah, oh, no.
Those we can assume would be women in the industry as well. So that would have been real bad for a lot of people and a lot of places that want to make money. So this is now getting into how Lita ended up getting the settlement she got, which we'll get to in just a moment. But so that was one thing she threatened to do. Also, what they found in these papers that they found in the abandoned Los Angeles bank, which I just can't get over. That's just so weird. How many banks
There's
are abandoned
no
around
time.
Here?
Run.
One of the things they found was she told the court that she was forced to do, quote, revolting sex acts that were illegal in California in the 1920s. And I'm sure that there were plenty of, it had to be awful being married to Charlie Chaplin. I mean, we haven't even talked about how he was just a staunch perfectionist as a filmmaker. And I'm sure just a hellion to be married to.
I can only imagine. Just,
you know, these high, powerful geniuses. Yeah, and he was so clumsy. And his pants were so big.
And those shoes. Always twirling that cane
so many damn
every time
hats.
You go to the kitchen, knocking things over. What a
They had Mary an unbroken dish.
Red flags. Red flags, Lita. Mm-hmm.
That's why he was filming in black and white, so you couldn't see all those red flags.
Hey. Hey.
I'll be here all episode,
very
guys.
Good. That's great.
Tip your producers.
So revolting sex, I mean, that sounds like sodomy law type stuff, right?
It would have to be, right?
So, yeah. So I'm sure it was all awful, awful. So I want to put that out there before I laugh. Because the main thing is he asked her to do a threesome is one of the things.
Oh.
And with another woman. But what makes me laugh about this is that because Charlie Chaplin asked her to have a threesome, Lita Gray ended up receiving the largest divorce settlement in the world.
Oh, Oh my god. Hey, okay. All right. That's the silver lining.
It's yeah, queen.
He had to pay her for the two surviving children, but I didn't know about the settlement. What are we talking about?
That's the thing. It was the settlement. I'm going to talk about what was the settlement plus the trust for the children. So it just ended up the final sum is just a hilarious amount of money. Oh, wow. And it was the largest divorce settlement in United States history. A lot of places said the world, but that just seems so ridiculous that, again, I would triple check that. But it was said in many a source. She ended up with the money for her children and her own settlement. Ended up coming out of the divorce with $825,000 in 1927 money. So if you want to do inflation calculation.
We have to do it. We got to boop that one.
All right. Drum rolling some boops, please. Here we go. So $825,000 in 1927, late 1920s, is worth over $13 million today, $13,219,060.34.
That's pretty good.
Oh my gosh.
He got.
So this woman is like, I'm not doing a threesome with you. Give me $13 million.
Yeah, do you think he even got the threesome? Do you think he at least got the threesome? I'm not rooting for him in this respect. I'm just wondering. Is that clear? Does she deny participating in this and just say that he was like trying to coerce her or something?
Mm. That's a good question because in retrospect, I thought I saw that she had done it, but I also saw that she said no. So again, I'm so sorry. We'll have to triple check. I do believe that she said no to it, but you know, she talked about being coerced into things. Mm-hmm. So it could have been that, but I'm sure just being a 16-year-old married to 35-year-old Charlie Chaplin, she was forced to do.
And that wouldn't
things.
Have been the only despicable act, right? She was referring to kind of a whole blanket. Yeah.
Completely.
And umbrella, initial, you know, of inexplicable. The initial getting her disgusting pregnant act.
At, what, 15?
Yeah. And she did talk about that too, actually. That was a big part of it was even at the time. This is what I mean about even at the time it was bad. She was like, he groomed me as a 15-year-old. He knew me since I was 6. And then, it worked with me since I was 12. So
this is where I'm just so grateful that we have like more rights now so that if you hook up with somebody once, you don't then have to marry them and have a very long, drawn out divorce in the public eye.
Thank God. Yeah. Because I think we've all had a few unlucky gambles with love. But there's something else that stands out here, Sienna, which is that even if, and we don't have to harp on it too much, but even if some kind of threesome occurred, I think it would be highly unlikely that she would have mentioned that or confirmed it in a public sphere because of the rampant misogyny at the time. And then also, this is an abusive relationship, clearly. So a lot of the stuff that's happening is about control rather than what he is. Is or is not into. So, I mean, if you think about it, this is one of the most famous movie stars in the world at this time. I think he could just find like two fans. If that was the important part of the sexual experience, he could just find two random people. But he wanted to force someone to do something they did not want to do.
It does certainly appear that way.
Really
I got to ask, I mean, did this like, torpedo his career? Or I mean, I feel like we're early in his career at this point and he went on to make other big movies.
He hasn't even made The Great Dictator yet, right?
Correct. Yeah. No, he moved on to both those movies that he was making during their marriage came out and they did great. And then it didn't stop his career at all. He went on to get married two more times. Yes, she was his second wife. So he was married two more times after this.
She was his second wife?
Yeah. I forgot to mention.
Oh my God.
His first wife is just tossing popcorn while she reads the news.
Hey.
But his career, no. I mean, he went on to keep doing great things. So she, though, ended up apparently investing the money sort of poorly in a nightclub didn't do very well. But here's the happy ending. And this is what I love is that. So she ended up working at a department store in Beverly Hills and many places I read that she really liked it.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know,
she liked working in a shopping environment.
Oh, thank God. She got to work. I mean,
it takes a certain type, right? Like, I'm sure, especially in some of those really high-end boutique-y type spots, that's a certain set of skills, you know, to be there every day and dealing with the public, you know. So
yeah,
I'm sure she really did.
Yeah, I read one of her obituaries, and I read an obituary about her in sometime in the 90s when she passed, and it said that she was really good-natured about the way that any of the things that had happened in her life and. I don't know. It makes me feel better to know that she had a happy life beyond that or found, you know, I mean, people move on and get through. But just after having just a horrible, horrible adolescence in the public eye.
I'm sure she wanted something simpler, you know, something less messy and, you know, than the public eye. I mean, it makes perfect sense that she would go to something more like in the private sector and kind of just, you know, do her thing.
Yeah. Yep. And Charlie so Chaplin went on to eat many more shoes. The end.
Also, guys, I have another dark note I would like to throw in.
Please.
And it is about Charlie Chaplin's other wives.
Oh, God.
Ah, and more importantly, their ages.
Yes.
So his first wife, Mildred Harris, they were married from, I believe, 1918 to 1920. She was 16 when they started dating.
I was going to ask about that. I was
R. Kelly vibes for sure.
They got married when she believed she had become pregnant. Yep.
Get to the third wife, though, Max.
We have Paulette Goddard.
Excuse me.
I think I'm saying that one right.
Goddard,
Paulette Goddard?
Goddard. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I believe she was 22.
Okay.
So
she's getting a little more age appropriate, I guess, but not much.
She's the elder of these women. Uh-huh. And then his last one, Una O'Neill. Important thing, she met Chaplin in 1942. So at this point, he would have been, what, 53? Mm-hmm. She was born in 1925. So she would have been around 17, 18 years old.
Man's got a pattern. No question about that.
He's got
Max with the depressing facts.
That's what I'm here for, guys.
I've got a great segue for this.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
By the way, here is a quote from someone we'll meet in just a moment about Charlie Chaplin. And this is what we call in podcasting a segue. Here we go. The quote. I'm not going to do a voice on this, but we are going to run into some voices. Just heads up. Comic genius or not, when I went to London to work with him, that being Chaplin, late in his life, he was a fearsomely cruel man. Probably the most sadistic man I've ever met. An egotistical tyrant, a penny pincher. He would publicly harass people. It goes on. The person saying this about Chaplin did work with him and does have some feelings. And that person is our next story for this episode, Marlon Brando.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer? Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Hey, Noel, have you ever wanted to wake up to something better?
Oh boy, have I ever, Ben.
Well, this is where Avalon Waterways comes in. How does waking up to a medieval castle, an ancient cathedral, a rolling vineyard, or a charming cobblestone village sound to you?
Here on Ridiculous History, that's right up our street, Ben, our charming cobblestone street. So I can say it sounds pretty good to me.
You're absolutely right, Noel. Avalon Waterways has redefined cruising in so many different ways. They've got the widest opening windows. They've got beds that face the passing scenery. So wherever you go, you have a front row seat to the views of the world. And not only do you wake up in the best staterooms in the entirety of the business, but you're waking up in a new port every day, right in the heart of these amazing historic cities.
Ah, Ben, sign me up. Open your eyes to a better view and a different kind of cruising. One with smaller ships, bigger experiences, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Dang.
Wow.
You know,
killing the segue, Ben. That was awesome. I was on the edge of my seat.
Thanks, Noel. That's why I skipped all those meetings this morning. I was just on the segue.
But no one talked to me. I got to make a segue.
No one talked to me unless you've focus. Got some Brando quotes. So
leave the divorce papers. I need to write a segue.
I'm at the bank and I'm going, there's no time. So the abandoned bank where Noel and Max and I work, apparently.
Yeah, it's our HQ.
yeah. We got to have a HQ. If we were villains, it would be a lair, but we aim for the more heroic, anti-heroic side. Anyway, so behind the scenes, on this behind the scenes episode, we had talked about this briefly when we were recording earlier. I had started out thinking, let me find a specific film that has a really crazy set of stories behind it. Similar to Liana, your work with Wizard of Oz. So I went to Apocalypse Now. And I was like, this is crazy. You know, how wild does a film have to be? How off the rails does it have to go for there to be an award-winning documentary about how off the rails it went? And then I thought, well, let's get weirder with it. Maybe that Island of Dr. Moreau reboot. And then I started looking at these other films that had these weird stories. And I recognized the one constant in them was Mr. Marlon Brando. I said before, you know him, you might love him now, but hang on a sec and see how you feel at the end of the show. There's no denying the guy is still widely considered one of the greatest actors of his era. He's in countless canonical works. Posthumously, he has ascended to one of the newest forms of celebrity, which is being a meme, right? Like at this point, films like The Godfather, you may not have actually seen it, but it is referenced so often in American culture that you already know what happens. You know what I mean? That's like definition of a classic. But what catches me about this guy is he was so weird. Disclaimer, there's a little bit of like, we're going to get into some more problematic things, which is why his complaints about Charlie Chaplin strike me as dubious and hilarious, and certainly not self-aware. So let's first talk about it. I think we all are familiar with Apocalypse Now. That's how my entry point began. Apocalypse Now, based on Heart of Darkness, very loosely based on Heart of Darkness. It's like
it's the Vietnam movie.
Okay. Yes.
We're not yet watched. It's on our list, but we haven't gotten to it yet.
Oh yeah, we gotta make it clear. They're not kidding. This is the whole point of your show, is that you like haven't you're not
we don't
like,
know anything about
super
movies.
Duper movie literate. Got it.
Happily unaware. But I did read Heart of Darkness in high school and it ruined my month.
It's upsetting material. Yeah.
Yeah, it is very much upsetting. So Apocalypse Now is about this shady military operative who is sent off the books on a covert operation to travel to hostile territory and to assassinate a legendary colonel who has lost his mind and has gone, like has become a warlord in his own right slash cult leader.
Oh.
See, that's about it, Noel?
I think that's about right. Wouldn't you say like he sort of has like become sort of like a weird tribal leader like on in this area? And he sort of has all these like cult members and like a compound and very much living kind of off the grid in this, you know, world that he's built for himself.
Yeah. And one very weird photojournalist played by, who was that? Nah, it's not important. So it wasn't Marlon Brando. Marlon Brando plays the crazy guy. He plays Colonel Kurtz. And Apocalypse Now, which I love as a film because it has some really strong monologues, Apocalypse Now was a disaster the entire time it was being filmed. It was filmed in the 1970s in the Philippines because the thinking was that this will look enough like Vietnam for us to get the tone across. But Everything that could have went wrong, went wrong. They had to replace the protagonist with a different actor. So Martin Sheen is the one you'll see on screen now. He had a heart attack while this.
Oh,
yeah. There's a scene where he's drinking a lot, right? So he is going full method and he's getting wasted on camera. So much so that he smashes a mirror with his bare hand. No. He has a heart attack. Oh. And... yeah, and we all
you
remember
can see that footage too, right? I mean, that's the thing they shot. Like that exists.
Shot? Oh my gosh!
Yeah,
wow. So
that's and you're going to see that early in. So man, they really wanted. Yeah. This is the beginning. So they really wanted Marlon Brando to play this iconic villain. Brando was not at his best at this phase in his life. He was doing this apparently just for the money. He only showed up on set for about 4 weeks and he got $3 million for this. And he had a list of demands which you could make if you're like a Chaplin or a Brando. And they were stuff like, I am not going to work at all on the weekends. I am not going to work past 5:30. And I don't really learn lines. You guys, I just kind of vibe.
Yeah.
You know, and so
we noticed
there was also, and not to be sizes, but this is something that really angered the directors here because when Brando finally shows up, like the last time they had seen him in the public eye, he physically looked very different. And that's who they thought they were casting as Kurtz. This is actually why most of the shots of Brando's character in the film, and he shows up late in the film. The majority of those shots are him moving through this interplay of light and shadow. And actually, this is just my opinion. I think it works really well.
It's awesome. Yeah, right? a lot of tight close-ups on his like weird bald head. That monologue. What does he say? Like the horror,
the horror,
horror. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Core high school memories getting unlocked.
It's interesting. I mean, it's a testament to Coppola too, and that he was able to kind of like roll with that and make it work. And now you wouldn't think of that character any other way. I mean, I can picture a world where this guy kind of was being sort of like worshipped as a god and just like, you know, served all the slaughtered, you know, animals that he could eat. And he gained some weight, didn't really move around much. He sat in a, you know, in a throne made of human bones. That's what I'm picturing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He also struggled with binge eating for a large part of his life. This stuff wasn't coming out of nowhere, but he was a real pill to work with. He also just decided he would do what he wanted in his scenes. The guy I mentioned who played the photojournalist, that was Dennis Hopper.
And that's right.
Yeah. And they got in like fights all the time. And Hopper was saying, you know, this guy is so massively unprofessional. And then Brando eventually refuses to be on set whenever Dennis Hopper is there. So it's kind of tough just logistically to film this sort of stuff, you know.
Hopper's big time too, right? I mean, he's probably throwing his weight around too. He was a big star.
Yeah. And they did kill water buffalo. Like, the more you learn about this, the more amazing it becomes to realize that this movie was made at all. He improvised, like, your main stars are just improvising stuff. One guy almost dies. Everybody is partying like they're in college. And that's not the weirdest. That's still not the weirdest behind the scenes thing. I would like to take us to the island of Dr. Moreau. Everybody knows that story. We're talking about the more recent adaptation. And I just want to check, has anyone seen this? Noel, I think you've seen this.
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it when it came up in the theaters. Just like, oh, it's a movie about like spooky animal people on a creepy island. I didn't know anything about, that was probably the first time I'd ever really thought about who Marlon Brando was. So to me, he was just this big fat guy with like white grease paint all over his face and like a little bandana. I didn't know any of his classics. I was like a kid, but weird movie watching it now, you know, realizing how troubled the production was, but also just what a weird movie it was. The whole thing about that, the director being a weirdo too, and lots of interesting stuff.
So let's dive in. So the recap of this, it is based on, or it's an interpretation of, an adaptation of the famous novel Island of Dr. Moreau, in which you discover that another isolated madman has been up to weird shenanigans when left alone.
Type cast at this point a little bit, huh?
Yeah.
I love that they've done this. Just like, boys left alone, it gets crazy. Like, you see that with Lord of the Flies too?
Right.
Totally.
So chaotic.
It's not inaccurate either, unfortunately. So one of the first things you'll notice if you're like a young Ben, Max, or Noel, and you're watching this, is if you know about the island of Dr. Moreau, you'll think there are some really interesting aesthetic choices. If you're like many people who maybe you read the book in, or you read the story in middle school or high school or something, you're going to be thinking, I don't remember these hats, or I don't remember the guy being slathered with sunscreen.
That's what it was. It was that white sunscreen that just like was all over his face.
I have seen a screenshot. I don't know anything about this movie besides I saw the screenshot of Brando.
Yeah.
Doesn't he have like a little familiar, Ben? Like a little weird dude that's like sitting on his shoulder the whole time or hanging out with him?
Yes. And he wasn't supposed to. Yes.
He is. Okay.
It's a real guy. One of the world's smallest working actors at this time was originally cast to be like one of the ensemble of part human, part animal creatures that were made by Dr. Moreau. But as soon as Brando saw him, now I'll give you the quote, like, it's problematic. Yeah. Yikes. He said, he was like, is that real?
Oh boy.
Are you telling me there's a man in there? And then like, he literally said that. And from that point on, he's like, this guy has to be in every scene with me. We're going to dress alike. And I have some notes on how Dr. Moreau dresses.
Oh, that's right. It's like a mini me situation. Right. That's kind of what, now that I'm looking at the photos, they're sitting side by side and they're wearing the same outfit.
It's he like demanded
in every
that?
Scene. Yeah.
Every scene.
That's so weird.
He demanded it. He also didn't learn his lines at
just
all.
Vibing.
He was like, I don't really do lines. And he, in one case, this is a guy who in some other movies had people he's acting opposite of. They literally had his lines like taped to their bodies.
Oh my God.
In Moreau, he was using an earpiece. And so there was literally some, you know, hapless script supervisor PA who got the not enviable job of having to go, okay, at this point we say, we are barely reaching the things of surgery. And he's like, we're barely reaching blah, 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 surgery. Yeah. I want to go back to the director. See, like, not all of this disaster is on Marlon Brando. A lot of it is, as well as his co-star Val Kilmer, who is an absolute pill at this time. But Noel, I think you mentioned the director. The director was originally Richard Stanley, and this was a passion project for him. It was his dream to make this book into a blockbuster, but he was let go from the film about 3 days into production. So he had a great 3 days. And instead, they hired a guy named John Frankenheimer, director of The Manchurian Candidate, to take over. But this this poor guy, Stanley, he was getting bullied by Val Kilmer. And like Val Kilmer would just alter dialogue. He would stand, if he wasn't in a scene, he would stand behind the director, chain smoking cigarettes and essentially talking trash about everything the director did, which is not typically the role of an actor.
Let's say what a catcher does, you know, to like psych out the pitch.
Right, yeah. Right. Hey, bada, bada. So this poor guy, Stanley, actually gets fired by fax. And which is like a text message. Just
cutting edge of the time.
Brutal. You know? I mean,
right. He got future fired. Yes.
That's how apparently Phil Collins divorced one of his wives by fax. Oh. I always thought that was an interesting little detail about that guy.
So there is something else you'll notice here. If we go back to DeBrando and the kind of mini-me thing that he demanded, every day before they would begin filming, Brando and Frankenheimer, the director who lasted, would meet up in the morning, and Brando would always have script changes that he was certain would make the film much, much better. And Frankenheimer had just had his spirit broken at some point, and he was like, okay, fine. That's when you see things like Brando saying, I need Dr. Moreau's entire face has to be covered in white makeup. And also, he needs to always be wearing a hat. And these hats are very different things. Sometimes they're like regular hats, like a sun hat you would see to provide a lot of shade over the shoulders. And then other times, they're things like an ice bucket. Like Marlon Brando was walking around on the set. He finds an ice bucket and he's like, now this is a hat.
Yeah, I have to say, though, I think it's an interesting choice. You know, like at the time, and you know, if you're the director, I could see that being super annoying, but like, it does make the character seem more kind of insane and like, you know, but also kind of like, maybe this is what a real insane mad doctor would do. He would, he would like have phobias about the sun and stuff. And I think the shots with him and the smaller version of him are interesting. And he also famously did something like that on The Godfather, where I think it was his idea to stuff his mouth full of cotton and all that.
Yes.
So he kind of had a reputation for making these like wacky, mavericky calls that end up working. I, you know, this movie is not good, but he makes some interesting choices.
Well, it's going into beyond good and evil territory, I think, after a certain threshold of
weirdness.
It just
sort of is, you know.
It just kind of exists. But but here's the rumor I heard, because I was trying to hunt this down. Apparently, there was a method to his method acting madness here. It came out that one of the reasons Brando wanted Moreau to always be wearing these hats is because there was going to be a reveal per Brando at some point in the end of the film. The big
rat
twist
was
would be
controlling
like,
him the whole time.
That would have been so much cooler. Here's the idea, Liana. The idea was that you were going to find out that Dr. Moreau had been doing self-experimentation and he himself was part dolphin.
No!
It's like a blowhole in the head situation. It doesn't make sense.
This is a thing that exists nowhere except in the mind of Marlon
Brando. I thought you were
going
to say something so interesting, like he'd been doing brain surgery on himself. I mean, this was still interesting. Like brain surgery, something that would be eerie, not a blowhole.
A blowhole.
Oh, that's what he was hiding. God, presumably a blowhole. But then what? They went a different direction, but they still decided to humor him.
There'll
with
be
the
a blowhole.
The
Don't worry, Marlon. There will be a blowhole.
Yeah. We'll get to that. Yeah, we got our best guys right on it.
We'll put it in post.
Yeah. Blowhole prosthetic technology has come a long way, Mr. Brando. But no, you're right. That was where Frankenheimer actually drew the line and said, okay, nobody talked to him about it until like the last day of shooting. And then everybody run like we did when we were in that bank.
And, and we need a better impressionist than any of us, I think, on here to do the moment where Marlon Brando pitches this idea to the director. Like, I can't do it. I couldn't possibly do it justice. But I want to hear, I want to be a fly on the wall for that moment, even if it's only like a recreation.
Right.
And also, I think this will help give us some context here. One of the things we have to remember about Brando in this moment is that he did not believe in this film. He did not see it as like, you know, the next Streetcar Named Desire. In fact, Firouza Balk, who you recognize and love from The Craft, had said in this, this was another film, by the way, Dr. Moreau is a film that was so weird, there had to be a documentary about making it. Yep. Aruza Balk's in the documentary, and she says that once upon a time, she caught him on a good day, and she went to Brando and said, excuse me, Mr. Brando, I'm wondering how our characters should interact on screen or what your take is. And then he told her, darling, no one is going to watch the movie, so just relax and have a good time. Don't worry about it. And then went to find, girl, you know, another weird hat.
Run along. Yeah, run along. You know, it's funny. You did two movies that have productions so troubled that they have documentaries. There's one about Apocalypse Now, too, called Hearts of Darkness, A Filmmaker's Apocalypse. It came out in 91. I have not seen it, but I've seen clips of it. And it's got, like, you know, there were all kinds of other problems on that shoot, like, you know, weather. And I think a lot of equipment got damaged and, you know, really just horrible kind of trials of the damned kind of stuff. But that's apparently a very, very great documentary.
Yeah, yeah, it is. It's worth the watch. I don't know if it's still on Netflix, but I would, of course, you know, I would say for you all, if you haven't seen Apocalypse Now, watch Apocalypse Now first, and yeah, then maybe sure, watch the documentary.
Apocalypse Now is actually an excellent classic, you know, iconic film. The Island of Dr. Moreau just kind of is, you know, like we said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
well, we were talking off mic or before about the Stanley who kind of had a nervous breakdown, you know, and there's a document. This is all in the documentary. He was kind of like stalking the set, you know, from the fort, the woods, kind of like creeping around watching the new director. He was out of the public eye for a long time and came out with a Nicolas Cage movie a handful of years ago, also based on kind of macabre source material called The Color Out of Space, which I think is great. So I hope he continues making weird movies because he's obviously a real creative dude.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And it's got some, we were talking about, it's kind of like the third act of Nicolas Cage's career. So he's doing a lot of cool stuff. He's doing Mandy. He did Pig, which I know you love, Noel.
I loved it.
I do want to say we talked a little bit about this off air before we began rolling today. I do feel we are ethically bound to say that despite the funny stuff about Brando, which will end with more funny stuff, so it's not an absolute slog, he was also a very problematic dude, and he did sexually assault someone on camera in a film, Last Tango in Paris. Yeah.
No!
Yeah, using what? A stick of butter, I believe?
That's correct. Yeah. And the director knew it was going to happen and did not stop it.
And it was like a setup almost for, you know, the actor playing opposite him.
Yes, that is correct. And no one got in trouble, which is weird. I say this all the time on different shows, but it astonishes me when you hear these stories about celebrities getting away with and you know, very well-to-do people, world leaders, getting away with all sorts of horrible, horrific things. And then I think, like, I can't get out of a library fine. You know what I mean? This is like a world I don't understand. I don't. Anyway, so yes, he has done horrible things. He also kept.
That's also a thing with directors that we see a lot, and we're kind of talking about in the last episode for this, which is kind of goes back to the directors just using their actors as props and whatever, because that was such a common thing that has come up in a lot of these movies that end up on the list that we're going through, like the greats list. A lot of times what the director did was not warn the actor, and that's how they got the amazing reaction that's so real. And that was totally just a common practice of directing for the longest time. I mean, I hope they're doing it less now, but it has just recently come out of fashion is what it feels like.
Yeah. Or directors and stars just being absolute monsters in real life. I mean, Polanski is still allowed to make movies and win awards for them.
Oh, yeah. He still gets, I think he's still, the French are still shielding him from prosecution here, but also like his films still get Oscar noms sometimes, you know, it's very weird.
There's still very, very little accountability.
Oh, 100%. But back then, even less so, Total Boys Club, like the director Bernardo Bertolucci, you know, is an Italian director. I mean, they shot this in Europe. So, I mean, there probably were maybe a little less oversight even over there. And that kind of tradition is maybe even a little more a thing in Europe. But absolutely kind of hijacking, you know, these woman's emotions, you know, and like for the sake of getting like a shocking take or whatever. It's pretty gross.
Yeah.
It's awful.
He also did really crappy stuff to other co-stars or other actors in scenes with him. For an example, he was filming a scene in a show called The Nightcomers. This is apparently a bondage scene. He tied the actor Stephanie Beecham to the bed, and then he left and he ate lunch, which is like, I don't think that's assault, but that's a real dick move, isn't it?
I mean, that's basically, I would say that's approaching assault.
Yeah. People should have consequences. He also, I wanted to end on some of his very weird stuff. Now we've acknowledged that. He got paid a ton to be in Superman, directed by Richard Donner. And he almost wasn't in there.
What's his name?
Kal-El,
Kal-El.
I think it's Kal-El, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, yeah.
So he is briefly in the film, very briefly in the film, as the white-haired patrician father of the child that will go on to become Superman. Hmm. He got paid a ton for what he was doing. And he also almost wasn't in it because he tried to convince the director. He almost walked away when he was arguing with the director over what this character should look like. His suggestion was a green suitcase or maybe a bagel, because we don't know what aliens look like. That was his line.
He should look like a bagel or a green suitcase?
And Superman would still be a Superman? Yeah, he gave some options, you know? 100%. He didn't want to be a dictator about
Superman
it.
Superman is an Adonis. His dad is a bagel. It makes total sense.
I mean, that's fun. I don't not like that, you know. But
I'd watch that Pixar. Everyone loves a bagel. It.
Yes. Yeah. 100%. So he would also do some things like he did raise awareness of injustice toward Native American communities. There's that. Yeah. He got in a fight with a baboon, a spitting fight. He won.
Did he tell that story though? Like,
there's
how do we
so
know
many,
he won?
Yeah.
It was I
have
I
we seen the baboon's
was,
oh, narrative?
You know what happens? He spit so well the baboon was just shamed and like walked away. I don't buy it.
Baboon never spat again.
Right. The baboon just bowed out and walked away. Yeah.
Exactly. So point is there's so many weird facts here. Pretty much every film Brando works on, I think through like the mid part of his career to the end, is going to have a bizarre behind the scenes story because the guy's just wiling out. But this also makes me think, like in the case of Chaplin, we see a perfectionist, right? Who is a very cruel man as well. But we don't see quite the same offstage absurdism or, you know, surrealness. One of my questions after just doing a little bit of Brando facts was this: how did this guy like function in society? You know what I mean?
A certain point of fame where you just don't have to, right? You can just live in your little bubble and like make a movie when you feel like it. I mean, I think he remained quite wealthy. He does seem like the kind of dude that maybe would have squandered his money Nicolas Cage style in like T-Rex skulls and, you know, weird culty houses. But like, I think he probably was well off. And I mean, you know, I noticed he did some of these jobs for the money, but I think he got to that level where he just had all this, you know, cachet. He could just kind of, he didn't have to be a normal person anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And maybe this is where we start to wrap it up today, because we started exploring Brando through Chaplin. They worked together on a film called A Countess from Hong Kong in 1966. Chaplin is 77. He's directing. I can't remember which child bride he has at this point, but Brando has horror stories about this guy, and he says he's good. He's like, he is a comic genius. I will admit that. He's like, but I watched him punch his son in the face on Christmas Day. He doesn't give any of his 11 children any money. He makes people reshoot scenes over and over again and doesn't tell them how to improve. He just like he would have his literal sons do these scenes. He would make them do it again, and he would just keep telling them how much they sucked. Like, this is not the fun guy you picture from those Tramp movies. He said that one day he came onto set 15 minutes late, which is actually really good for Brando later in life. He goes onto set 15 minutes late. Chaplin explodes and then humiliates him. And he says, in front of the whole cast, Chaplin berated me, embarrassing me, telling me that I had no sense of professional ethics and that I was a disgrace to our profession. And that was the time he stood up to him. And this is so like unnecessarily dramatic. I want to see what you guys think. He told Chaplin, he said something like, very well, I am going to return to my dressing room. I will wait there for exactly 20 minutes. And if you do not arrive to apologize to me within that 20 minutes, then I'm leaving on the next plane out of here. And then apparently Chaplin does relent and go apologize. So they eventually finish the film, which didn't do well.
Wow. Brando, it's just what happens when you put, like, just pitting massive egos against each other, as we are doing with our tossed popcorn Matt Frederick feud, of course.
I was going to ask, was that the baboon spitting contest he was talking about?
Hey. I also have a little joke. I don't know if you can use this language-wise, but Chaplin may have played a little tramp, but in reality, he was a big dick.
Hey, that's the way.
That's perfect.
That's the way. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you so much for coming back on to part two of these bizarre behind-the-scenes stories from the world of film. Liana, Sienna, it's been amazing. We do have a quick... Can we get like a breaking news cue? We do have a quick update. All right. So we have heard back from your nemesis, Mr. Frederick.
Okay.
He says, I said, you once told them you were going to start a rival podcast called Caught Popcorn. Any remarks? And he said, this is correct. However, upon further consideration, I hereby bow to their show. I won't be making Caught Popcorn. At which point, Noel, not to volunteer all of us, but I said, you and I could try to negotiate on his behalf. You know, like Hamilton before the duel.
We're here for. But what about the not follow back on social media? I think that's where the true beef began.
The true slight, at least in this era.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll be talking to Matt on our other show, actually, in just a bit. So maybe we can bring it up there, too.
Spread it around. Tell the whole podcast industry. Yeah. We have started a celebrity
feud. We're feuding.
So tell us, where can folks find your pre-existing podcast, the one that we're that you're doing right now, called Toss Popcorn?
Our podcast, Toss Popcorn, well, you can find it anywhere that you want to stream podcasts. Specifically, some good ones would be the iHeart Podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, etc.
And we are all over social media at Tossed Popcorn. Matt.
Follow back. Come on, dude.
Yes. And thanks, of course, as always, to our super producer, Mr. Max Williams. Thanks to our ridiculous historians. Thanks to Casey Pegram, friend of the show. Noel, I know we've got more people to thank, including my nemesis, Samantha McVeigh, our nemesis, Jonathan Strickland. But I wanted to thank you, man, because this is a two-parter that we planned in advance, and I think we all had a great time.
Can we do like a power high five, or we leap into the air and then it makes like a cartoon explosion effect when our hands move? We just did that through the magic of podcasting. I've been toying with the idea of making Max my nemesis, but he's just so damn nice. It's really hard to get that one off the ground. Yeah. So.
I mean, Noel, you're not good enough to be my nemesis.
Hey, here we go.
Good enough.
This is good.
Good enough. Okay.
No fighting in front of the company, Max.
All right. Okay. All right. You know what? Maybe I retract all those nice things I just said about you, Max, and it's on, buddy. It's on.
Noel, you and me have spent too many hours in a hot tub together to be nemesis.
Okay, Spicy.
Oh, that's true. Remember the hot tub times.
Is that a true story?
The hot tub.
Yeah, we've been in a hot tub together on a couple of occasions. Matt and I knew each other in a previous life. There were others.
Also, it's still
in your
Max.
Hot tub days.
Why can't I go into the hot tub?
You can, man. The virtual.
This
in
is
virtual
another
hot
feud
tub right
that's
now.
Starting up.
What is a Zoom call feud if not a virtual hot tub? That's what we're, you know, we're all in these waters, navigating
true.
These
so
bubbly waters together. You can also find Ridiculous History on some of the social media. We have an Instagram called @RidiculousHistory. We have a Facebook group called Ridiculous Historians that you too can be a member of. You can also follow us as individual human people on the internet. I am @HowNowNoelBrown exclusively on Instagram.
you can get a sneak peek and maybe some spoilers for the research I'm doing on various shows, as well as my misadventures that I don't always announce in advance, by checking me out on Twitter at BenBolinHSW, where I'm currently campaigning for a Book It program for adults. I think more people would read if we knew you got pizza at the end. You can also find
pizza
me on
party.
Instagram. Yeah, exactly. You can also find me on Instagram at Ben Bolin, BoWlin, named in a burst of creativity. Max Williams, the rumors are true, my friend. You have a apparently not just a hot tub, but a Twitter account. I am resentful.
That is true. That is true. I do have a Twitter account. You can find me at @ATL_MaxWilliams. Where I'll mostly just, you know, retweet what Ben says, occasionally comment and troll him, and a lot of stuff about sports and, of course, Star Trek.
Can't troll me, bro. I'm not on Twitter. So
I won't get on Instagram.
All right, perfect. Then
your feud is going to be hard to maintain.
Between me.
I guess you guys will just have to catch up at the hot tub. I am an outcast on this show.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at AvalonWaterways.com.